Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mac Show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And last week we did a one-on-one. It was Patrice and me, and we're going to do it again. Except you can tell it's not Patrice today, so it's Chuck Joyner and me. Chuck, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. We haven't done a one-on-one. Well, not on the BTN for ever. Is
I
this
think
a first?
This might be our first.
I think you're right. It is. Yeah. So, well, hey, you know, it's the start of a holiday weekend here. And so some of our friends, apparently, regardless of what country they're in, started early.
Yeah. Can't blame them. Yeah. Ooh. And I had completely forgotten it's a holiday weekend. Yeah. But it makes sense because, everyone's gone.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
except us. We're just, you know, the two stalwarts manning the battlements.
You know, someone has to take one for the team, and here we are. Yep. There was a look on your face for a brief second, like you're about to say something that was going to send both of us to the HR department.
There was, and I stopped, and so we don't have to make the trip this time.
Discretion being the better part of valor.
Yep. This time.
Yep. This time. Man, dodged that bullet. It's the Mac Show. So we'll talk about some Mac stuff. And how about if we start with the news that Apple is offering a little bit more information about the bug that popped up in iOS 17.5, where photos that you had deleted potentially years ago suddenly reappeared in your photos album. And so Apple says that the photos that they're saying didn't fully delete. Okay, delete is binary, people. It's either deleted or not. So
sort of. We'll talk about it, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. But still, something that's 10 years old that's been deleted should actually be gone. But what Apple's saying is that these photos never actually synced to iCloud Photos. So they were part of local database corruption, is what it sounds like. And that the photos may have continued to exist somewhere in the mix, like on some device somewhere. And because of that, since there wasn't a proper sync process happening, that after the 17.5 update, that these supposedly deleted photos that were still existing somewhere propagated back out to your other devices. That's it.
And that's it. And the reason I brought up the kind of deleted, and I saw another explanation of this, and actually Ken Ray talked about it on his news show, but his other show, which I'm blanking on completely at the right now. But the idea, it's the same thing with your computer. If you delete a file, the file is marked as deleted, but that data is not actually gone. That's why some of the recovery programs can pull things back if you accidentally delete them at your user level. Mm-hmm. Now, so you can argue, is that data, and in this case, the photo, really gone, or is it still theoretically recoverable? Obviously, it's still theoretically recoverable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get in this weird space where do you really want And then should we have an option to just absolutely unconditionally with no possibility for recovery, be able to delete a photo?
I say we should be able to do that. We have options on other devices, like on your Mac, you can do a secure delete. And the difference between deleting and secure deleting something is, like you said, when you delete something, the space where the file is tagged as available again. The file is tagged as deleted. So it disappears from what you see, but it still sits on your storage device until the data is overwritten by something else. When you secure delete, it actually overwrites the space where the file was with just garbage. So so the file you were expecting to be gone is actually at that point literally gone.
And so this brings up a question, because you can control that on your machine. But if you have something synced to somewhere else, we kind of have the same question. And I'm not just talking about iCloud for photos, but I'm thinking Dropbox or Box or any of those. You assume that when you delete a file, that it's deleted. But this raises a question that maybe someone should do some research into, including us, that if I delete something in my Dropbox account, is it just marked as deleted and the data is theoretically still there that could be recovered?
The data is still there because you can roll back through history, sort of like Time Machine, and you can even pay to have an extended history available to you on Dropbox and the other services.
Right.
So yet when you delete something there, it's there for I don't want to say an extended period of time, because I don't know how long the files are actually retained, but there are copies of your files that you deleted that exist for some time frame after you actually deleted them.
And so, and we're kind of off topic and on topic here, but you know, this raises a question of all of these online services, the ones we favor, the ones we don't favor. You know, you need to think about what you're putting there, and is it convenient? Absolutely. Is it secure? Probably for 99.9% of the people, it's fine. But you know, there's that 0.1%, and especially if they are. And look, let's just be adults here about it. You know, questionable photos. If you have questionable photos, you should not be syncing those anywhere. You should be putting those somewhere that is as secure as you can make it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, in my mind, and Jeff, help me out if I'm wrong about this, but if you wanted to take photos like that, take them with an app on your iPhone that does not sync to iCloud and does not store your photos on the camera roll. That it stores it in a separate storage. And then at least in theory, you have a better chance of actually deleting that completely.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Everything you can do to isolate the photo files for images that you want to keep private for whatever reason. If you can take those photos and have them saved outside of Apple's camera roll, then you've isolated them more. And if that's a location where it can be password protected, so it's encrypted, even better. And while we're dancing around the whole thing about nude selfies, There are other photos that you may take that need to be secure in some way. Maybe you have taken photos in lieu of saving hard copies of your tax returns or some other legal document or your credit card information, something like that, where for whatever your passport, like if you're traveling internationally, and you want to make sure you have a spare record of your passport. Well, for me, that stays in 1Password. But yeah, if you're just taking photos of that stuff and you want to make sure it's secure and away from all of your other stuff, yes, use a different app to do that.
And you just brought up 1Password, which is an excellent idea if you're taking photos of that you want to have securely stored, but that don't go anywhere that they shouldn't go and are encrypted. So you may already have your solution sitting on your devices right now. You just need to take advantage of it.
Is there a photo option, like to actually take a photo inside 1Password?
I don't know. I was thinking more of moving them to 1Password, but you bring up a great question.
That would be kind of cool. Be able to do secure scans right in 1Password. Well, if it's not a feature, it's about to get submitted as a feature request.
Yeah. Okay. According to, I just, you know how we do, Jeff, we do research here on the fly.
Right.
Let's see, on 1Password.com, support 1Password iOS hyphen privacy hyphen settings. Save photos and videos in 1Password. Scan your setup code or QR codes to use 1Password as an authenticator for sites with two. No, that's not it. You can take, oh, wait, try this. You can take a photo inside the 1Password app on iOS to save in 1Password.
Well, there you go.
Yep. For example, you can take a secure photo of a password to avoid saving it on your phone or in the cloud.
Drop a link to that in the chat, please.
I will do. Well, that's interesting. Okay. Oh, great. You know what? Put a pin on in that. Google turned on generative AI for me. Thank you very much. And that's what it said. Now I've just got to find that in 1Password. But that seems like something that is way too. There we go. Photos, save passwords and videos in 1Password. Okay, tried this. Into the chat. There we go. Sorry about
awesome.
That.
Awesome. I am not a fan of Google doing the generative AI thing in your search results. You know how we've talked periodically on various shows about the enshittification of software? To me, this is a big enshittification of internet searching. And I saw an interview, or part of an interview, a few days ago, where I just forgot the name of Google CEO.
Sundar?
Yes.
No, that's not right. Sundar Pichai?
Yes, thank you. Where he was being asked about the search results, and whoever was interviewing him did a search and showed him the results and asked if he thought this was okay, because the search results were just basically garbage. And he really tried to defend it as this was better, this is what people want, and people aren't looking for an actual website. They want explanations. They want overviews. They want synopsis. That's what they want in their search. And man, talk about losing touch with your user base.
Well, I mean, this may be a good lesson here. And again, we're sort of off topic. But so what came up on my screen? It does mark it as AI overview, and it lists just what I read to you a minute ago, along with important files such as a copy of your will, car registration, etc. What it has below that are three little sections that look like these might be the sources for this. This part I like if this is the case. Mm-hmm. But one of them is from a Reddit post. One is a 1Password support. The second one is from 1Password support. Actually, there are four of them. The third one is from the 1Password blog. So if those are the references that I can go and check on the summary, I feel a little bit better about it. But the thing is that I'm on my recording machine here, so this is not my daily driver. So I haven't played with the settings on it, which is why this came up. But I'm so used to now seeing that top result in Google that, I just right away said, oh, here it is. Yes. And then realized it was the AI. So, just be careful out there because the AI stuff, look, I think it is, if you can fact check it, that's great. It may take you exactly where you want to go, but you still got to fact check it.
Yeah, you do. And hey, as long as we've given up on staying on topic, and we're doing the whole Google thing,
Yeah.
since Google did the switch over to this new AI generative synopsis thing, I have found that the top result is worthless to me. Excuse me. Because it's always paid placement. Hold on. T. Anyhow, it's always paid placement. Now, in many cases, that paid placement is the thing that I'm looking for. But because I'm pretty sure, because I'm running a Pi-hole server now, because the whole thing with ad placement had become so overwhelming and cumbersome on my iPads and on my iPhone when I'm searching for stuff here at home. I had to set up a Pi hole to block ads, and so of course I'm using it with my Mac too because I would experience some of the same problems. Those top placed links in Google, they're all broken for me now.
Jeff, educate us as to what a pie hole is.
Oh, sure. I should probably get a link and drop it in the chat. Okay, so ad placement pop-ups and trackers have become enough of an issue for people that well, even your web browser has an active ad blocker built in. And we've had pop-up blockers for years. And if you need to have greater control over the level of content that's being blocked, then you can use a tool like Pi-hole, which then acts like your DNS server for you. That's funny. It's like saying ATM machine. But anyhow, so it becomes your DNS, and then it has a blacklist of servers and content to block. So when you excuse me, so when you type in a domain name or whatever, your pie hole will intercept the content and then block all the things that have been blacklisted. So you have so what you get out of it is the all of those ads and trackers that you didn't want, you don't see anymore. And because all of that extra junk isn't coming through to you, web pages will load faster. So there are various ways to do a pie hole. You like if you have a Synology, you can install pie hole there. And if you have like a spare Mac or something, a spare computer, you can set up a pie hole there. Mine is actually a Raspberry Pi that was sitting in a drawer, and so I just popped a new SD card into it. And installed Pi-hole, and it's running headless. It's actually in the cabinet underneath my television, and I literally never see it because I don't open the cabinet, and I just log into it from my Mac or my iPad or my iPhone. It gives you a web interface because it's running its own local web server so that you have a graphic interface for it. I can check stats. I can make sure that my database is up to date. And it's pretty slick.
So this may be a good time. You're right. We're way off topic, but you know, we've gotten here logically, right? So it's okay.
Which is surprising for us.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first thing, as you were speaking, I thought about is this might be a good time for folks to explore something other than Google. So you may want to start looking at something like DuckDuckGo as an alternative, and see if that meets your needs. But Jeff, as an alternative to the pie hole, I think, I was having a conversation with Joe Kissel recently, and he turned me on to Vivaldi. And I have been very impressed with Vivaldi and how much junk I don't get and how much faster it seems. Now, I'm a little torn because, you know, we're talking about ad blockers, and this is how websites fund their operation. It's how podcasts fund their operation. And so, you know, you kind of get into this mixed feeling of, I really want to support the websites because they're advertising. I really am not anxious to start paying for every website I visit. However, it's becoming burdensome. And I'm not going to call the podcast, but one, in fact, it's a business podcast. I'll give you that much. And it's not Lex Friedman, by the way. Lex does a really interesting ad read the way he handles his, but this is not that one. So I'll take that away. It's another business podcast. A recent edition, Jeff, I had 4 minutes of pre-roll before I got to the content.
See, that's unacceptable. And that's exactly. A bad business practice right there.
Exactly. Exactly. And somebody could say, well, you do it on your show. You know, you introduce, and you know, the show that my intro music comes up, and you know, the graphic comes up, and then I say who sponsors the show, but it's only seconds. Then we get into the content, and then later on there's the actual ad or ads. But this thing of pre-roll, I know that's where people want to be. I know that's where the advertisers want to be. 4 minutes, I'm on the verge of unsubscribing based on one show, one episode.
I'm with you. Yeah. And you know, the thing with setting up the pie hole, it was something that I actually thought quite a while about and really debated, should I do this? Because I'm aware that I get paid a pittance, a very small pittance, on the Context Machine for ads. And that's how Brian and I finance just having the show run. We don't make money on it. It just, you know, there's that the ads pay for the services. And so I know that by running a pie hole, I am depriving some websites of their ad placement. Now, it doesn't block, like let's say, Chuck, you sell ad space on the Mac Voices website, and so you place that ad there yourself. A pie hole is not going to block that, and that's okay. It doesn't need to block that. What it's blocking is the ad that comes with a ton of extra code and all of these extra trackers and just starts eating your memory and bogging down your browser and then screwing up the website so that it's actually not usable. And that was the big thing for me on my iPad and my iPhone, hitting websites where they were just simply unusable because of the ad code. And which is ironic. It means that the best browsing experience I get on my iPad is when I'm at home, as opposed to when I'm out on someone else's network. Because I do have to keep an extra DNS in the settings so that when I'm away from home, my, my devices can still get on the web, because my DNS that I'm using with the Pi-hole, the IP for that, let me say that a different way. The IP address for my Pi-hole, which serves as my DNS when I'm home, is a local address on my network. So it won't work for me when I'm somewhere else. Yeah.
And look, there are ad blockers out there that you can pay for. There are probably some free ones. Mm-hmm. You know, I always hesitate to do that. I've always hesitated to do that. I've played with them, and it always feels like sometimes they compromise certain websites. Mm-hmm. I know there are one or two websites. I don't mind saying it because you can go and test it yourself. Ticketmaster, you know, they won't even let you on their website unless if you're using something to block ads, to block trackers, has been my experience. And so, you know, there are times I want to get on Ticketmaster, even regardless of their business practices, and buy the ticket. So you have to be careful that you're not shutting out the functionality of a website. I am curious because I wanted you to clarify and we're using me as an example. Great. Mm-hmm. If I place an ad on the Mac Voices site, what you're saying is, I assume it's like a graphic with a link. Is mm-hmm. that the kind of ad you're talking about? So that's hard coded, and it's not there's nothing else going, and so therefore it's not blocked.
Correct. And if you're using like you have a WordPress website and you're using a plugin that allows you to manage your own ads, that's different typically as well. So you could be doing ad placement where it's just you. It's not one of the services that's doing it. And it's not adding in a bunch of extra cookies and other trackers. So it's not like using something like a Pi-hole is going to prevent people, companies, services, whatever, from using ads. It's preventing me in many cases from seeing the ads that are going to make it difficult to even use the website or to be tracked.
And if you do start to use any of these things, the odds are that they will show you how many trackers have been blocked.
Yes, has a really great page in the in its little browser interface, where you get all these charts showing percentages of stuff that's blocked. Excuse me, I mean some stuff is getting through, but it's a fraction of what was. But yeah, you can see the stats of what's being blocked and what devices on your network are taking advantage of the Pi-hole and having ads blocked. So you can even go down to the device level and see what's happening on per device for stats.
I will throw this in the chat room as soon as I find it. But I just read an article last night that a new version of Little Snitch is out, and it now has a graphical representation of some of where your Mac is making, where your Mac is making contact with behind your back. And it really was very interesting. So I'll find that and drop it in the chat. But
Little Snitch is a cool tool.
It is. It can screw things up, you know. So it's one of those that you have to be careful with, mm-hmm. Because if you end up blocking the wrong thing, then suddenly other things don't work anymore, mm-hmm. Which is a double-edged sword. But that said, yeah, if you take the time to learn how to use it, it is kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. So. But it's just the idea that you start to get feedback. It seems like we talk on all of the shows we're on, Jeff, about security and privacy and, you know, all this stuff. And I'm sure people get tired of it. I think we get tired of talking about it. But, man, it seems like every 10 minutes we turn around and there's a new something pop up. Not pop up. That was wrong. That comes up about, you know, why, how we're being theoretically taken advantage of without our knowledge. Take advantage of me all you want, as long as you tell me you're taking advantage, but don't do it behind my back.
Right. If it's consensual, great. Potentially even fun. But without consent, then no, it's just wrong.
Yeah. And that's where it feels like we are in so many ways.
Hey, you know, as long as we're pretending like we are having topics today, want to talk some music?
No, because I know what you're about to bring up, and it sent my blood it sent my blood pressure up.
Well, wait, maybe I'm not bringing up the thing that you're thinking of. That this is Apple's 100 best albums.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Okay. So
go ahead, you start.
All right, I'll start. So, Apple they've done two things. They have their 100 best albums, and then they have their 10 best albums. And actually it's the same thing. They just did two press releases, I think. One where they said, "Hey, we have our 100 best albums," and the one where they said, "Here are the 10 best." But what they did was they got a group of people together, and this group presumably are qualified to talk about the best albums of all times. It's like radio DJs and or streaming DJs and musicians, and anyhow, so it's a qualified group, and they came up with what they consider the 100 best albums of all time, and excuse me, and it's an interesting mix of albums. It feels like in some ways it is limited, because I feel like it doesn't really give us a full representation across the musical genres. But it is an interesting list, and it was interesting to see how many of the albums on their top 100 I actually had.
Honestly, I hadn't even thought about that, because I have so few of them.
I have a very wide and eclectic taste in music.
Well, apparently you have more than I do. But, you know, I look, first of all, this feels like anytime anybody puts one of these lists out, it's borderline clickbait. Because to your point, you know, how do you cut across all genres and really do it justice and balance one genre against another? Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's the first thing. The second thing is, and you did a great job of trying to describe who the panel is, because I promise you that I can put together a panel of 10 people and about 80% of these albums would not be there.
Mm-hmm.
That you would. So, you know, all that said, I always, and the other thing that always bugs me about any of these lists is I feel like albums released in the last 5-7 years should be exempt, to give it a little bit better perspective. And so, you know, that's just my humble opinion on these kind of lists. That said, I look at some of this and it's like, really, you know, and the farther up the list, it's like, how do you say that this one is better than that one? Why did something not make the top 50 that, in my opinion, should have made a lot higher than the top? My God, Exile on Main Street from the Rolling Stones is number 53. At least it's in the top 100, but really? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Abbey Road and Purple Rain are both in the top 10. Abbey Road is one or two higher on the list than Purple Rain. And to me, that seems like a travesty. Purple Rain is, I think, far superior to Abbey Road. And I know that there are a lot of people that are like, but the Beatles, sure, but Prince. I mean, how do you argue that? Prince, it's Prince.
Well, and see, and Prince wouldn't make my top anything because I'm not a Prince fan. So there you go. Mm-hmm. You know, and I look at Abbey Road, and Abbey Road's a great album, but what about Sgt. Pepper's? You know,
right.
This is where you run into a problem of trying to, you know, figure out are there limitations? Can a given artist only have one album in these lists?
There are artists that have multiple albums in this list.
I didn't look that closely to know, but you know, it's a fine list. I do question the number one because I'm still trying to figure out how that got to number one. If you said Abbey Road was number one, I'd have kind of bought it. If believe it or not, even though I'm not a Prince fan and he wouldn't make my top anything, if you'd have said that he made it, that he was number one, okay. You know, in some people's camps, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fun discussion to have and can be infuriating.
We talked about the top 10 list from this on In Touch with iOS last night. And as we were having our discussion, Ben Rathig, he brought up the fact that he wasn't seeing any of the metal bands that he thinks should have been in here. And I think that's totally valid. And it made me realize, oh, wait, this is sort of like the Oscars or the Golden Globes. This is industry navel-gazing.
That is the best description of it I've heard. I agree 100% with you because I don't know how you feel, but I seldom see any healthy percentage of the movies that are for nominations because they don't fit my interest level, you know? And so you're right. It does come across as navel gazing unless you're a pop culture fanatic and boy, I'm going to get in trouble for this one, but unless you just don't have any specific tastes and you just absorb everything that is thrown at you and you're told what the best stuff is, then okay, you know, that's fine.
All right, here's the irony for me with this. Apple has and it's not just Apple, but we're talking about Apple today. So Apple has a bad track record with discoverability on their services, whether it's music, TV, movies, apps. It's just not a good experience for finding new content. Wow, how bad are they at this? I didn't even mention books, and they have a digital bookstore. Anyhow, this list that Apple put together, this is the best discovery, music discovery thing they have done. And the reason I say that is because here's this list of 100 albums. And I think it's safe to say for most people, they will find music on this list that an artist that they didn't know about, that when they check out, they'll be like, oh, I like this band. I like this person. And they will be finding music here that they would have never found any other way when it was the iTunes store or now the music store.
That's an interesting point. If you approach it from, as you just did, from the standpoint of music discoverability, it's funny. I don't look at this and think, oh, wow, you know, number 23 is one that I somehow missed. So I look at these and I'm looking for the genres that mm-hmm. I'm interested in. And to Ben's point last night that I was not a part of, you know, I'm not seeing them. I mean, yes, Guns N' Roses is on there with Appetite for Destruction. AC/DC is on there for Back in Black. Mm-hmm. Two albums that absolutely deserve to be there. Mm-hmm. Metallica's
Dark Side
there.
Of the Moon is on there.
Dark Side of the Moon is on there. You know, that's another one that, even though, again, I'm not a Pink Floyd fan, that could have been in contention, I think, for, you know, the seriously high numbers. But it's just, I mean, music is art. And, you know, if a piece of art moves you, it doesn't matter what it is or who it is or how it is. It just does what it does. And if a piece of music doesn't do that for you, then go find something else.
Yep. There you go. All right. Oh, wow. I hit a trigger point for you, Chuck.
You did hit a trigger point for me, Jeff, because it's, you know, what if they said 100 great albums? Okay. You know, but implies that it's why I don't like to say anything is my favorite, because I like so many things. So do I have a favorite food? No, you know, I could probably start to try to list the top 10, mm-hmm. but then I inevitably, you know, think, well, number 11 should be number 9. I don't think in terms of favorites, you know, I do think in terms of best at times. And to circle around to an earlier point in the conversation, I think I've made the best choice that's available with one password.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't, is that best for everybody? Probably not, but I don't know, but it certainly is best for me. And so I wouldn't mind saying that, as long as it's a caveat that it's my best, not the best.
Yeah, that's fair. Hey, but you know what is the best?
TSO hosts.
Right. TSO hosts. Yeah. And what makes them the best? Well, they offer great web hosting. They offer great pricing. They offer great customer service. And they're taking all these things that they do so well, and they're saying, hey, British Tech Network, we love what you're doing, and we want to help you do that. So they're giving us the resources we need so that we can live stream shows to you every single week. That takes a lot of bandwidth. That's a lot of resources. Without TSO hosts help, we would not be able to bring together those resources to do what it is that we do. They're also giving us the hosting space we need. So there's a place for the BTN website to live. They're giving us the server space that we need to host show files so you can watch or listen to your favorite episodes anytime you want. And seriously, that generosity is what's letting us be here for you today, where we pretended like we had topics and we just really kind of made it up as we went along. But hey, that's how we roll. So seriously, TSO hosts, thank you for being here and supporting us and giving us those resources we need to be able to be here with all of our BTN family. So thank you. Hey, all of you, go out on social media, please, and thank TSO hosts for being here. It's easy to do, only takes a minute, and it's a great way to let them know that we all appreciate what they're doing for us. So please, just go give them some online love. And thank you again, TSO hosts, for being here and supporting us. And oh, wait, I forgot. It gets even better. Let's say you need to pick up some domain names, maybe why can't Jeff and Chuck stay on topic.com? And you're thinking, oh my gosh, I really, really need to go buy that domain name. Or maybe the domain name you're going to buy is, holy crap, Dave Ginsburg just showed up in the middle of me talking about tsohost.com. Well, you can get that at TSO hosts as well. Just throw those in your cart. If you decide you need to make a website to go along with them, throw a hosting package in. But be sure you throw in the discount code BTN20 so you get 20% off your order. So already great pricing. And then because you're part of the BTN family, it becomes even better. So seriously, thank you, TSO hosts, for being here. And Dave Ginsburg just showed up. Dave, how are you doing?
I thought I'd make a cameo appearance today. How you doing? Thanks for
Doing
having me.
great, and it's a special treat to see you here today. Chuck, I hope you don't mind that it's not just the Chuck and Jeff show
No,
anymore.
of course not. No, and Dave's not even joining from a plane. So yeah, it's
No,
great.
it's not a plane.
Yeah,
It's at the
although
office.
that was pretty awesome when you joined from the plane.
That was good.
So Dave, you showed up just in time to watch me fumble through talking about the live chat.
I've got perfect timing.
You have perfect timing. Okay, so usually Patrice does this, but she's out this week. So I'm going to pretend like I'm competent and capable of talking about the live chat. So here's the deal. We have a live chat going on when we're recording the shows. So we do this on Thursdays for the big show. Here we are Friday on the Mac show. And all the links for the things that we talk about and the links for our cool things, they all end up in here. So you have an easy way to find everything we were talking about in one place. And if you're watching or listening live and you're in the chat, you can talk with us in real time, and you get to be part of the show that way, which is really cool. So how would you do that? Okay, so I finally have my personal guide line to help me keep this straight. Chat at the beginning means we're at the show. After the show means chat at the end. So chat after the domain name. So that would mean that chat.britishtechnetwork.com is where you go when you want to be part of the chat while we're actually recording a show. And if you want to see everything after the show, so like you didn't get the opportunity to be here with us live, you can still go and see everything that was in the chat for the episode that you're checking out now. And for that, you would go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And I think I've got those right. And when you go to that link, then you'll see this really cool calendar that Patrice made. And you click on the date for the show you're checking out. So like today, for example, would be Friday, May 24th, 2024. So you click on the date, and then there'll be a link for today's chat, and click on that and you'll see all the links, and that's all there is to it. So Patrice did an awesome job of getting all this set up and making it easy for you to find all the episodes, chats. And usually she's here to give you a fantastic explanation of the whole thing, but she's not. I did my best to channel my inner Patrice, but you know, she's special, and all I can do is try to very weakly fill her shoes. So anyhow, that's how you find the chat. And so actually now we can do some cool things. And Dave, if you happen to have a cool thing, cool. And if not, since you're making a cameo, that's cool too.
I can always come up with a cool thing.
Of course you can. Just reach out. There's something within arm's reach of you, and that will be cool.
And how about the iPad Pro?
Yeah,
is a cool thing, because I have an iPad Pro 13 inch. I'm absolutely loving it.
Mm-hmm.
It is probably one of the best iPads I've had. And, the screen is amazing. Performance is great. The M4 processor. I've got the 512 gig version. Went in space black, which is really nice. And I'm very, very, very impressed with this iPad. It's lightweight, which is amazing. It's only 5.1 millimeters thick, and it's just a pretty amazing device. And I think anyone who wants to go out there and looking for a new iPad, I thought it was well worth the upgrade. I went from the 11-inch M1 to now I am for a 13-inch, and I'm very happy with my decision. I mean, all the iPads are great. I mean, we've got the 10th gen, and you've got the iPad Air, which is even another better, a little great deal too. Starting at $599 for that model, and Apple's done a really great job with that. But this one is a really good quality. And then really the only differences between the 512 version and then you go to the 1 terabyte version is that the fact that you have an extra core in the processor, and you also have 16 gigabytes of RAM. Is there a drastic difference between those two? I don't see it unless you really need it. I think this 512 is a nice good sweet spot on it. And they also, if you wanted the nano texture screen, we've talked about that. There's another option, but you have to have the 1 terabyte or higher on that. But yeah, go check it out. iPad Pro 13 inch, my cool thing.
Awesome. Look at that. You show up just out of the blue, which in itself is an awesome surprise. And you were so on top of it. You had a cool thing just right off the top of your head.
Right there.
Just
Just
like
like the
that.
podcast. I'm always on top
Just so on top of it. Okay. I came this close to saying, speaking of on top of it, Chuck, what's your cool thing? But I didn't, so you're welcome.
Thank you very much. I think Dave just showed up to brag about the fact that he has a new iPad
I mean,
and
that's
make us
fair.
feel
It just came off the
bad.
top of my head, and here I am, so.
But Dave, that's all right. That's all right. I'm, you know, I wore a green shirt because I had a feeling I might be jealous today, you know,
At
over something.
least I put on
So
camera.
thanks. So I'm going to pick what I think is my favorite car mount. This is the SR from Mag car mount charger with Halo lock. This is a car, obviously it's a car mount for your iPhone. It can be mounted by an adhesive mount. It can use the vent mount. I mean, it's got a lot of different mounting options, but this is a charger. So what you do is you can plug a cord into your car and then into the mount, and it is constantly charging your iPhone. This is great if you are lucky enough to have wireless CarPlay, because then you literally do not have any cables to connect. If not, but it's one of those things that might be aspirational for you at some point, and you still need to connect your phone into the car directly, that's fine because it'll still charge. But bottom line is, it has that nice strong magnetic mount. I have never hit a bump that was so severe that it jarred my phone off of this mount, and that's definitely an important thing. Best of all, right now I put the link into the chat. This is on a special deal. I have no idea for how long, at $22.39 in the U.S. Amazon store. So I can't recommend this highly enough. This is just a great mount. It has that option that if you do move up to wireless CarPlay in your car or through one of the third-party options that have been recommended here numerous times, it solves that whole problem. So you just get in your car, drop it on the mount, and you're off and running. Again, even if you have to plug in your phone and then put it on the mount, that's fine too. It still is super convenient, completely adjustable. I don't think you can go wrong with this, and especially not at that price.
Yeah,
That's really cool.
I just bought an ESR case for this for the iPad, and now I think about it, because I wasn't ready to spend the money on the Magic Keyboard just yet. And yeah, they make some good quality products.
Yes, they do. They do.
All right. Super cool. My cool thing, by chance, Dave, fits nicely with yours. And this is a cool thing that I have picked before, and it's one that I currently use. However, it's been updated. And this is rock, paper, pencil. And
Oh,
this
yeah.
is the iPad screen cover that adds a texture surface and includes its own Apple Pencil tips, so that you get a feeling that is more like paper or pen, as opposed to plastic and glass. And even though I've picked it before, I'm picking it now because they just released their version. Astropad just released a version of rock, paper, pencil that supports the new M4 iPad Pro. And they had to redesign it because the front-facing camera moved from the portrait top edge to the landscape top edge. So the new version is out and available now, and these cost what, like $35? $39.99.
40 bucks.
Yeah, so $40 for one of these. And I bought mine when they first came out and absolutely love it. My plan is whenever I get around to getting an M4 iPad Pro, that I will get a new rock, paper, pencil that fits on that. And it has completely changed my experience with using my iPad. And I have tried lots of textured screen protectors, lots of alternate Apple Pencil tips, and so far this has turned out to be the best solution for me. So there you go. M4 version of rock, paper, pencil from Astropad.
Just spend my money.
You won't be disappointed.
Now, of course, I bought the old one and never used it.
Oh, well, someone's gonna need it, and you've got it
Guess
for them.
so. Yep.
Jeff, a quick question on this for you, because I thought about our discussion about this particular product previously, and then I was listening to a nanotexture discussion. So does this provide for someone who doesn't use an Apple Pencil? Is this a poor man's option for a less glary screen?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the texture surface on this cuts down on glare dramatically, and it does not impact clarity.
Now, what about it? Is it removable, and you can remove it and put it back, or is it,
Yeah, you can. It
and it
the
stays okay, that it can be put back on again when you want to use it again.
the original version has magnetic strips down the edges, and so it attaches to the magnet points on the surface. The second version that came out, it has some material that replaces the magnets, but it now goes all the way around, and it clings and doesn't wear out. So you can put it on and peel it back off as many times as you want.
Okay, good.
Sort of in follow-up to Dave's thinking though, Jeff, is this something that in normal use, with an AirPod, excuse me, with an AirPod, where did that come from? With an iPad, pardon me, that it will get, I don't know what, accidentally partially peeled off or wrinkled or whatever, or does it sit so flat that I can almost like a screen protector that I can put it on and just forget it's there and I never know it's there.
Put it on, forget it's there, and you're fine. It's durable enough that it's not going to peel up or be wavy on your iPad or get wrinkled. If you did something when it wasn't on the iPad, like you folded it in half, you're going to end up creasing it, of course. But yeah. Normal use, even some abuse, it's not going to be a problem. And if you take it off, it comes in a sleeve. So you can slide it back in the sleeve and keep it there, which has the added benefit of helping keep it clean so that you don't get junk on the smooth back surface side, which lays against your glass.
Got it.
I'm
Thank you.
super happy with this.
Because I'm thinking for my use case, and I would be, regardless of which iPad we're talking about, I would be using it with one of the keyboard covers where the keyboard, folds up flat. And so I want to make sure that, I'm not, because I know the tolerances there are pretty tight, and I wouldn't want to cause any issues with either the iPad or the rock paper pencil.
I don't think it'll be a problem. I'm using Apple's Keyboard Folio cover with my iPad Pro. So the keys are pressed against the rock paper pencil all the time when it's closed, and it's not a problem at all.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Sure. All right. So with that, it's now time to wrap up. And Dave, since you joined us just in time to wow us with your amazing cool thing, why don't you tell us where people can find you?
Find me at In Touch with iOS, at intouchwithios.com. I'm on YouTube at youtube.com/intouchwithios. I'm here usually on Fridays here on the Mac Show. I'm on Mac Voices Live every Tuesday night with both of you and many other cavalcade of fun people. And you can also find me on Mastodon at DaveG65 at mastodon.cloud. Thanks.
Awesome. Awesome. And Chuck, where can people find you?
MacVoices.com, where you'll find everything. We are back in the saddle a little bit with some of the NAB interviews that I did, and just scheduling prevented us from releasing those. But I also always feel kind of strong that I do a disservice if you try to get them out too fast, because they're too fast, they're too many, and they're already buried in all the other NAB announcements. So these still are very, very timely. Some very interesting people, some very interesting, cool new products this year. So check it out. And on all the socials, you can find me as at Chuck Joyner.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Then for me, Jay Gamut on the social medias, and I'm active right now on Mastodon, Instagram, and Threads. Then for shows, oh wow. It's like my show team. Chuck's Mac Voices Live on Tuesdays. Dave's In Touch with iOS on Thursdays. So thank you both of you for letting me join in on your shows. And here on the British Tech Network, Thursdays for the big show, Fridays for the Mac show. Then also, Brian Chaffin and I do the Context Machine. So with that, hey, it's time to wrap up and start enjoying our slightly extended weekend because which holiday is it? Memorial Day here in the
Memorial
US?
Day.
Memorial Day on Monday. So everyone, it's so great that you joined us today. So thank you to everyone that's here with us live, and everyone that participates in the chat. All of you that watch or listen to shows later, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. All of you, every single one of you rock. And speaking of rocking, Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for shows. And Tioso host, thank you for being here and supporting us. Give them some online love, please. Also on the support thing, everyone, please let's support the Daily News Show. It's fantastic. 5 minutes of the tech news that you need waiting for you when you get up every day. And Kyle does an absolutely amazing job with that. But it does take a little bit more to make that show happen. So we need some more money coming in to keep that going. So everyone just go to the BTN website, click the button and send some money in. Also, when you're sending money in, that money gets you a little bit extra for just because you're awesome. So everyone go support that too. And with that, hey, don't forget to join us next Thursday for the big show. Then again on Friday for the Mac show, and holy forking shirt balls. I just realized all three of us are going to be together in less than 2 months at Mac Stock Conference, in Illinois. Crap, I just forgot what town we'll be in. I
Crystal
don't
Lake.
need to, at Woodstock,
Crystal Lake.
Crystal Lake. See, the important thing for me isn't to know which city it's in. I just need to know which exit to come out of O'Hara to see Dave
That's
and then
right.
hop in his car.
Oh,
Yeah. So anyhow, come see all of us at Max Stock in Crystal Lake, Illinois, and all three of us are speaking. So it's going to be lots of fun. And okay, so with that, everyone, have an awesome weekend. Join us next week, and we'll see you later.